Well, today we are wrapping up this series that we have been in throughout the month of May that we have been calling You're Not the Boss of Me. And this entire series has really been a how-to series. It's been focusing on this concept of how to say no to the emotions that compete for control in our lives. Because every single one of us, whether we like to admit it or not, have an emotion or two that is constantly trying to slip into the driver's seat of our lives. For some of us, it's the emotion of guilt that is constantly trying to slide its way in. For others of us, it's anger. And for others of us still, we struggle with envy in our lives. And if you're anything like me, you're saying, yeah, Ben, maybe it's kind of all three of them that's constantly trying at different times in my life to slide into the driver's seat and to take over control. And yet none of us want those things to be the boss of us. And so throughout this series, we have learned these steps that we can take to look things like envy and guilt and fear in the eye and to say, you are not the boss of me. And today we wrap up this series with this one that is still hanging out there. This one emotion that still so frequently competes for control in our lives and is a detriment to everything God has designed us to be. It's this emotion that Jesus has so much to say about it. The emotion of fear. You see, the reason that I believe Jesus has so much to say about it is because Jesus knew to the core just how detrimental this concept of fear, this emotion of fear, could be in every single one of our lives. Jesus understood how easy it would be for fear to begin to take control. And so in that, he began to teach us about how we can look fear in the eye and say, you are not the boss of me. Because deep down, Jesus knew that fear would never be a good boss. That worry and anxiety would never be an appropriate boss in our lives, competing for our mood and our mouth and our actions. And yet it so easily happens for so many of us, right? Especially in the present circumstances that we find ourselves in, fear seems to be a constant part of our lives. And yet what I'm willing to acknowledge at the outset is that for some of us, maybe a very small percentage of us, our outward expression of fear is something that we have never really struggled with. In fact, for some of us, there are multiple people in your life who would say you'd actually be a little healthier if you had a little bit more fear, a little bit less skydiving and a little bit more fear in your life. This is my youngest son. You see, what we've quickly realized is that there is this trepidation that is slowly growing in my wife and I around our first family vacation that's happening this summer to the beach. Because when we look at our youngest son, what we know is he is going to have absolutely no fear of the waves that come crashing in. And the undercurrent and everything that could go wrong in the ocean. And we learned this slowly day by day with him. Just this weekend, we were doing a cookout with some family over Memorial Day. And our youngest was out on the swing set. And he had slowly learned that he didn't just have to get up to the platform of the swing set by going up the ladder, that he could actually walk up the slide as well. And so there was this one moment as I was sitting there in a chair by the grill, just watching them play on the swing set, where he walked up the slide and was standing on the platform. And I thought, oh, no big deal. He's going to come sliding back down. Well, he walked back to the back of the platform where there was only the ladder going straight down, and he did one of these motions. And in that moment, everything rose up inside of me, and I lifted out of my chair, and I screamed, stop! And our youngest, with absolutely no fear, turns around and simply smiles at me and proceeds then to slide down the slide. Unfortunately, very few of us live our lives in that manner. Very few of us can attest to the fact that we have lived life with very little fear and anxiety and worry and stress. You see, we might have been fearless kids, but then somewhere along the way, we grew up and the world got the best of us and fear slowly began to slide into the driver's seat of our lives. Fear has become the boss of us. And if we look close enough, what we'll see time and time again is that when fear has become the boss of us, It has robbed us of opportunity after opportunity. It has interfered in our relationship. It has affected our marriages. It's affected the way that we parent. It keeps us up at night. And this fear and this worry and this anxiety makes us unhealthy beings physically, mentally, emotionally, and yes, even spiritually. And let's just be clear. Fear doesn't just manifest itself in our fear of being hurt or our fear of death. For some of us, we don't really struggle with fear of those circumstances and situations in our life as much as we struggle with the fear of change. We fear things being different, and we fear our routines being upset. For some of us, our greatest struggles and fear revolve around the reality that someday our kids are going to move out of the house and leave us alone with our spouse. We don't want our jobs to change. We don't want our daily routines to change. We don't want the things that we've always known and become accustomed to be any different in our lives. And so it isn't so much so that fear has gripped us because we fear getting hurt or what might happen to us. We have fear that grips us because we simply don't want things to change. And we feel like we would just be better off if everything in our life remained status quo for as long as possible. And the uncertainty, even the uncertainty that comes with the necessary growth in our lives, is the biggest barrier to us being the people that God created us to be. You see, fear can grip us in many different ways, but none of those ways are healthy. And what we often miss is that fear is simply a byproduct in our lives. Fear is simply a byproduct of who we are, of how God created us. And it's a byproduct in this way. Fear is a byproduct of our ability as humanity to accumulate knowledge and then to project that knowledge into the future. You see, that's what makes us unique as human beings, that we have this ability to accumulate knowledge and then to use that knowledge that we have accumulated to begin to assess how what's happening around us will dictate our future. And oftentimes what happens in our lives with that ability is we begin to create one of two scenarios. As we accumulate knowledge and we begin to project what might happen in our future, through our minds runs one of two results, one of two thoughts. The first is this, and this is the good thought. It's the thought of, I can't wait. This is the anticipation that grows inside of us, believing that something incredible might happen. I can't wait to get married. I can't wait for the business meeting. I can't wait to get on the roller coaster, because we believe if we take those steps, something incredible might happen. This is the ability within us to hope and dream, and even for those of us who have Christ are Christ followers, to have faith in our eternity in heaven with Christ. You see, for so many of us, what we often overlook is this ability in us to accumulate knowledge and then project into the future was supposed to have more positives than negatives. Unfortunately, for many of us, when we look close enough, what we'll find is this. We most often slide not into the I can't wait thought process as we're projecting into our future. We most often slide into the thought process of what if? What if we take this step and we go broke? What if we take this step and it ends in divorce? What if we fall off the roller coaster? What if we're not as happy with the new routine as what we were with the old routine? What if this whole thing fails because we're trying something new? You see, fear was never meant to be the boss, because it is just straight up not a good boss. And when fear is the driving factor of our lives, it always throws us off balance. It throws us off balance physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, every single time. Because here is what fear does. It keeps us self-focused. It keeps us from taking chances. It keeps us from reaching further into our world, further into our city, to impact people's lives, to help people, because what we've grown accustomed to believing is that our lives is like climbing a ladder. And when we climb up the ladder, the further we reach out into the world, the more likely we are to fall off the ladder and get hurt. When God is looking at us and he's saying, no, what I'm trying to help you see is that that is how you live the best possible life. You see, oftentimes it keeps us from changing anything in our lives to grow or get better. That's what happens when fear grips us. And what's so incredible is that Jesus knew about this tendency in you and I, this tendency to constantly live our lives in the what ifs. And so time and time again, he came back to trying to help us through changing our mindset from what if to I can't wait. And when we read the stories about what Jesus did and about what Jesus taught, oftentimes we have this tendency, if you're anything like me, we drop in on a story. We drop in on a miracle story. And we simply see it at face value. But we don't see the underlying current, the underlying theme of what Jesus is trying to do and how all of this connects in the life of his disciples and how it translates into your life and into my life. And so today we're going to do that. We're going to look just past the surface of some of the miracles, and we're going to see this underlying theme, this underlying current of what Jesus is trying to do time and time again and experience after experience in the lives of his disciples. And when we look close enough, what we'll find is that Jesus is trying to convey this one message, probably more than any other message, to his disciples. Fear not. Don't be afraid. Stop being afraid. Just knock it off. You don't have to be afraid. And to that, we would all say, thank you, Jesus, for the obvious. Because that's really easy to say, but what we all know from our lives is it's virtually impossible to do. And if you're sitting there and you're feeling that tension, take heart. You're not alone. Because all 12 of these guys called disciples that walked with Jesus for 3 years straight, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, they struggled with that concept as well. They found themselves time and time again falling back into the grips of fear, allowing fear to slide back into the driver's seat. And yet Jesus was attempting to set these guys up to make the greatest impact in the most difficult adventure of their life. And we see that happening in the book of Matthew, chapter 10. It's where we're going to dive into first this morning. And if you haven't done so already, this is a perfect opportunity for you to grab the weekly that maybe we sent some of you all and to crack it open and pull out the notes page to follow along with us and maybe even fill in the blanks as we go. Or if you don't have one of those sitting in front of you, you can click on the icon below the screen and you can pull the PDF of the notes page right up on your computer screen or on your television. Or if that's not your style, you can simply wait as all the passages and all the fill-ins slide across the screen as we move through them. But here is what Jesus begins to convey again and again and again to his disciples in Matthew chapter 10, starting in verse 16. And I'm just going to highlight this, and then we're going to come back and dive into it just a little bit more. Jesus says this, "Look, I am sending you out as sheep among the wolves." And so he sets the table. He's like, you're going to be sent out. And what you know, like this was a reality for his disciples. For us right here, 2020, we don't really get this concept of sheep amongst wolves, but they had lived this. They had experienced this. They had seen this in the fields around the countryside. I'm sending you out as sheep among the wolves. You are going to experience things that would cause the regular human being to be fearful. But here is what I'm instructing you to do. But don't be afraid of those who threaten you. Here, Jesus begins to lay out these concepts. As you go out as sheep amongst the wolves, there are going to be people who threaten you, people who persecute you, people who try to kill you. But I don't want you to be afraid of those who threaten you. I don't want you to be afraid of those who want to kill your body. So don't be afraid. No matter what, fear was never meant to control you. And can you just imagine the disciples looking at Jesus and asking this question that every single one of us should ask every single week we come to Core Community Church? The question of how? Jesus, how do we possibly live that out? How can we possibly get rid of fear in our lives when you're telling us that our mission is to be sheep sent out amongst the wolves? That there are going to be all of these things that happen to us and our lives ultimately are going to end in death? How do we not be afraid? And Jesus said, well, let me teach you in one of the greatest ways that I know how. for many of us and our favorite part of elementary school. I want to teach you through field trips. And so Jesus takes them through all of these experiences to try to drive home the point of how we can live a life that is eradicated of fear. And we see that happen just a few chapters earlier. In Matthew 10, where we started, Jesus is just reviewing for them. He's reviewing what happened in Matthew 8 in this field trip that they had gone on. Starting in verse 23, what happens is Jesus gets his disciples into a boat and they begin to cross the lake. Now, what you need to imagine here is that as these 12 disciples and Jesus pile into a boat, we're not talking a large boat here. We're not talking a bayliner. We're not talking a yacht. We're talking a boat that's probably 15 to 20 foot at max. And these 13 guys pile into it, and they begin to cross across the lake. But suddenly, a fierce storm struck the lake with waves breaking into the boat. So here are these guys loaded down into a boat, and this fierce storm rises up, and now water is coming into the boat as the waves beat against it, and the winds and the rain come pouring down around them. But in the midst of all of this, Jesus was sleeping. Now, what you need to imagine here is this. This is not a pretty moment, right? Each of these men, as the storm was raging around them, each of these men could not see the shoreline. They saw no rescue, no safety, because the storm was so fierce. All they could see was their isolation with water around them, and yet here was their leader sleeping in the boat. And because it was such a small boat, Jesus was most likely sleeping and getting soaking wet. He was sleeping in the middle of the rain. And here were all of these guys in an absolute panic, with their hair matted against their face, and they come rushing in the middle of this storm to Jesus. The disciples went and they woke him up. They were shouting. Now, what you know if you've ever been out in a rainstorm is this. In order to get your point across as the rain is pouring down, it's not a normal conversation that takes place. You can't speak in your normal tone. In order for the person right next to you to hear you, you have to shout. And so here these guys come to Jesus in an absolute panic, and they're shouting, "Lord, save us! We're going to drown!" And in that, Jesus doesn't even fully get up. This is so incredible. Like, Jesus doesn't even panic. He just kind of like props himself up on his elbow. And he looks at these men in their absolute panic, and he responds in this way, "Why are you afraid? You have so little faith. Oh, you of little faith." And they're like, "What? We have hair in our face? No, you of little faith." And then, in this moment, Jesus finally decides to get up. And as he gets up, he rebukes the wind and the waves. And suddenly, there was a great calm. The disciples were amazed, and they asked this question that can change every single one of our lives, even right here, right now in 2020. Who is this man? Even the wind and the waves obey him. Now, in that very last sentence, in this retelling from Matthew, who was there, who lived it, what we see is Matthew telling us that these men were amazed. But Matthew wasn't the only one who wrote about this occurrence. Mark also wrote about this occurrence after sitting and listening to Peter tell this story again and again and again. And this is what Mark chose to write after he listened to Peter tell the story. This is so good, and yet we often miss the significance of what Mark writes. In Mark chapter 4, 41, this is the exact same moment of the story after Jesus had rebuked the wind and the waves and there was a great calm. This is what Mark writes about the disciples in those moments. The disciples were absolutely terrified. Now, if you're anything like me, I've read that story 1,000 times, and every time I've read that line, I've just associated their terror with the storm they just came out of. But as I read that story more closely, what came across me was this. Wait, what? They were terrified? Why were they terrified now? Jesus had already calmed the storm.
The wind and the waves had already died down. Why were they scared now? And there's this incredible line that different translations use that actually says this. In that moment, they feared a greater fear. In that moment, what was happening was the disciples were like, we were afraid, and then we were even more afraid. We feared the storm outside the boat, and then we realized who was in the boat with us. Catch this. For a fleeting moment, the disciples' confidence in Jesus overwhelmed their fear. For a brief moment, in the eyes of the disciples, when they fixed their eyes on this man, their confidence in this guy named Jesus overwhelmed their fear of the world around them. Jesus was trying to teach them. You don't have to allow fear to be the boss of you. You don't have to allow fear to overwhelm you because there's something more overwhelming already in your boat. There can be something more powerful than fear if you'll invite it into your life. So we come back to this breakdown of the field trip. We come back to Matthew chapter 10. And as Jesus is going through all of these different things, the disciples are going to walk through after Jesus leaves this earth. He keeps saying to them, you're going to walk through this, but don't be afraid. You're going to go through this hardship, but don't be afraid. You don't have to be afraid. Check this out. In verse 28, he says, don't be afraid of those who want to kill your body because they can't touch your soul. Fear only God who can destroy both soul and body in hell. What is the price of two sparrows? And to that we say, I have absolutely no idea. But they knew. One copper coin? But not a single sparrow can fall to the ground without your Father knowing it. And the very hairs on your head and my head have all been numbered by our Creator. And because of that, you don't have to be afraid. You are more valuable to God than a whole flock of sparrows. Guys, come back because this is so good. This is something that we don't want to miss. We have become so good at allowing our fear to slide into the driver's seat of our lives and to begin to paint the picture of our future. We have allowed fear to take control and to dictate what we believe about our future. But time and time again, we fail to project the truth that God is already in our future and knows our future into our future. God knows what's going on. And He cares about what you're going through. Even in the moments when bad things are happening, even in the moments where it seems like your prayers are going unanswered, we have the ability to trust in a God who loves us unconditionally, who is in the middle of all of that with us, who cares about every finite detail of our lives, the things that seem petty, the things that seem inconsequential. He cares about every single one of those things that we walk through. And the disciples are finally coming to grips with that truth. But within days, much like you, much like I, the fear starts to creep back in. And so what does Jesus do? How about another field trip? And He does this field trip on the back end of a story that we know so well. Jesus and His disciples are on this mountainside, and there are all these people who have come and they have gathered to hear Jesus speak. And as so many of us speakers do so well, Jesus had probably spoken for far too long. He had spoken for the entire day. And here, this entire group of people, over 5,000 men, had been gathered all day, and they were getting hungry. And so the disciples had this genius plan. Let's just send them home so that they can find something to eat. And Jesus looks His disciples in the eye and He says, you feed them. Disciples are like, what? There's no way we could possibly feed them. And we all know the ending to the story, right? Jesus finds the loaves and the fishes and He feeds the over 15,000 people that are there on the countryside. And as the party is about to break up, Jesus begins to give this command to His disciples. He begins to set up this next field trip. Immediately after this, Jesus insisted that His disciples get back into the boat and cross to the other side of the lake while He sent the people home. Now, maybe you didn't catch this. There's this one word that is so important. It says that Jesus insisted his disciples get into the boat. Why did Jesus have to insist? Because the disciples were not dummies. They remembered what happened on the last boat trip. Right? We've all had those moments for those of us who are parents, right? Where we had this genius idea that we were going to jump out and scare our kids, and we absolutely terrified them in the moment, and then the next second we're like trying to coax them. No, it's okay. Come to daddy. No, it's okay. Come back into this room. And they're like, you ain't fooling me twice with that one. The disciples are doing the exact same thing. They're like, we're not getting back in the boat. We remembered what happened the last time. And Jesus is like, no, just get in the stinking boat. You guys need to experience what I'm about to show you. And so they get in the boat, and they begin to row across the lake again. And as they were rowing across the lake, the disciples were in trouble far away from land, for a strong wind had risen, and you can just imagine in the disciples' mind, they're like, here we go again. We fell for it. And now the same thing is going to happen. And they were fighting the heavy waves. And so here they were, hour after hour. They were rowing against the storm, rowing against the waves. And they found themselves in the middle of the lake, making no progress, hour after hour. And then at about 3 o'clock in the morning, Jesus came toward them, walking on the water. Now let's pause for a second. For some of us this morning, this is the sticking point with Christianity. You're like, Ben, you're trying to get me to believe that this guy named Jesus actually walked on water. That's ridiculous. See, but here's what you need to know. See, we don't believe that Jesus walked on water. We don't believe that Jesus rose from the dead because the Bible tells us so. It's so much better than that. We believe that Jesus walked on water because these guys like Matthew and John and Peter, who saw it and experienced it, who lived this, they wrote about it. And here's what's so incredible. As these guys saw it and they experienced it and they chose to write about it, they wrote these things down at a period of time where they were the heroes. Everyone in Jerusalem who had chosen to follow Jesus looked at these guys as the titans of faith. And yet these guys, as they were writing their accounts, they chose to write themselves into the accounts as the people who were fearful every single time. They wrote in their embarrassing responses to Jesus. Who does that? That's just not logical. No writers ever do that. They either choose to omit themselves from the story altogether, or they choose to write themselves favorably into the story. That's what makes the gospel account so incredible. That's what makes these guys' accounts so believable. It's because it's unbelievable that they would choose to write themselves in as the guys who were constantly filled with fear and responding in the most negative way, time and time again. That's what these guys did. And this account is no different. You see, when the disciples saw him walking on the water, they were terrified. The fear gripped them again, not that long after they had already failed the last boat experience. And in their fear, they cried out. And you're like, Matthew, are you really telling the whole story? You were crying in the boat. And Peter would be like, yeah, that's what happened. We were all a bunch of men out there crying. And they said, it's a ghost. But Jesus spoke to them at once. Don't be afraid, he said. Take courage, for I am here. Jesus was making it clear that when I am here, there is no need to fear. As long as I know what's going on in your life and I'm here, there's no need for fear and worry and anxiety and stress to be the boss of you. Even when there's something to fear, you don't have to fear. But once again, it doesn't stick with these guys. And what we see is time and time again until the very end, fear slides in and begins to take back control. We see it happen as Jesus comes and raises this man, his friend named Lazarus, from the dead, and the crowd and the support begins to swell, and they go marching into Jerusalem, and people line the streets, and they begin shouting and cheering for this man named Jesus. They lay their coats down, and they wave the palm branches, and they begin to believe, maybe this is it. Maybe we will become the trusted advisors of the King, the Messiah, that we have been waiting on for hundreds of years. And then they march into the upper room and they share a meal to remember the Passover. And Jesus begins to tell them about this new covenant that he is coming to set up between God and his people. Jesus comes and he begins to tell them about this new movement that's going to be set up, that the church will be built on the rock, and that nothing can stand in the way of this movement. Nothing can stop it. He begins to put himself in the shoes of Moses, the one they had set their expectations around. And he begins to say, there's this new commandment that I am coming to give you. And in that moment, all the disciples, the hairs on the back of their neck rise, and they believe this is the moment. This is where it all comes to fruition. And hours later, this man named Jesus is arrested. And he's taken up on a hill, and he's beaten, and he's crucified. And in that moment, as they look death in the face, they realize that everything they had attached their life to was now dead and gone. That everything they had hoped for was now out of business. But then days later, they peered into an empty tomb. Days later, they came face to face with their once dead, now living friend. And in that moment, they were back in business. The resurrection punctuated everything Jesus had said about himself. Everything Jesus said, especially about fear, made sense in that moment, that the world would continue to be a scary place, but they didn't have to be scared. And this was so cool. In the following years, they literally faced down the men that put Jesus to death. And they advanced God's kingdom. And they pushed forward no matter how scary the world around them was. They lost their fear of death, but not just physical death. They lost their fear of ruining their reputation. They lost their fear of changing routines. They lost their fear of things being hard. They lost their fear of getting hurt in relationships. And when all fear was gone, the world was changed forever. And not just them, the world to come was changed forever. You see, fear not changed the world once. But the question that now stares us in the face is this: can it change your world and my world again? And years later, after these men changed the world on the backs of fear not, there was this incredible occurrence that came during the reign of the Emperor Marcus Aurelius. Now, to set up the backstory, what you need to know is that during this time, it was against the law to perform an autopsy on a dead body. Probably the reason why medical advancement was few and far between during those days. But what doctors would do was this: that as the gladiatorial games were going on, the doctors would wait on the side of the arena. And as these men had been brutally injured, they would wait for them to clear the victorious gladiators out and all of the animals out. And they would rush to the sides of these men who were on the verge of death. And in those moments, they had just a few fleeting moments to begin to examine the body, because once they officially died, the body was off limits. And one of those doctors who time and time again would examine these near-dead bodies, he chooses in his medical journal to write this. And we have an account of this. This man named Claudius Galenus wrote this about the Christians that he encountered on their deathbed. This is so incredible. What would our life look like if we began to be described like this? Here is what he wrote. As he came in contact with Christian after Christian, on the verge of death, he said, "For fearlessness of death and the hereafter is something we witness in them every day." It was this reality that when you worship a risen Lord, when you have a boss who has mastered life and conquered death, it is possible for me to fear not. Not because there's nothing to be afraid of, but because I have fixed my attention to the one I can trust and the one who controls it all. You see, for many of us, fear seems like a permanent fixture in life. It feels like a constant battle. But deep down, none of us want fear to be the boss of us. And Peter, this man who had constantly given in to fear time and time again, the one who failed both boating experiences, the one who panicked in the sight of middle school girls after Jesus had been arrested, the one who lied, the one who hid, he said, I'm coming to you and I want you to understand the steps that you must take, what you have been invited to at the hands of this man named Jesus in the midst of your worries, in the midst of your fear, in the midst of your anxiety. There's a step that you are capable of taking, a step that you have been invited into that can change your life and your world forever. He writes this. The step you must take is to give all your worries and all your cares to God, for he cares about you. Peter simply experienced what many before him and many after him would experience. He experienced this reality that when God is for us and we fix our attention to that, what we see is that nothing else really matters. It's the reason why men like Joshua, in the face of life-threatening battle after battle, was willing to write things like, be strong and courageous. You don't have to fear. Joshua, how is that possible in the midst of the life-threatening battles that I am walking through right here, right now in 2020? Because the Lord is with you. And he goes before you. We don't have to fear. We are capable of looking fear in the eye and saying, you are not the boss of me. How? Because the one I have invited into the boat with me is greater than anything we will face outside of the boat. Pray with me. Father, I know for myself that fear is something that so easily slides into the driver's seat of my life. And it doesn't always manifest itself in being fearful of harm that may come to me or death that may come to me. Sometimes the greatest fear I experience is just a fear of change. It keeps me from growing. It keeps me from getting better. It keeps me from reaching further out into our world to help and love on people. God, frankly, I'm tired of fear being the crappy boss of me. I want something better. But God, this morning, the only way we experience something better is to stop fixing our eyes on all the circumstances outside of our boat, because there will be scary things that happen outside of the boat. That is an assured thing. That is a promise. In this world, you will have trouble. But the one in your boat is way more overwhelming than all of the things outside of your boat. God, today, I pray for every single one of us as we move forward, as the circumstances of life constantly change, that we will choose to fix our eyes on the one who mastered life and conquered death and gives us the ability to fear not. It's in your name that we pray. Amen. See, I don't know about you, but I know that my life, my heart, the way in which my emotions control me have been changed. And I pray that it has impacted you over the course of the last 5 weeks. But as we put this series in the rear view mirror, we move forward with a new incredible series that builds off of this week, that dives a little bit deeper. We're going to go into a 4-week series that we are calling Hope in the Dark. It's going to be an incredible series that answers questions like, where are you, God? And in the valley seasons of my life, how do I embrace you? And how does a good God allow bad things to happen to good people like me? All questions that we face on a daily basis. And as we ramp into this new series starting next week, there is more exciting news. We are also coming back to in-person gatherings. We are relaunching here at Core Community Church. We will have 3 services starting next Sunday, June 7th at 9, 10:15, and 11:30. And we are pulling all the stops out to make this an absolutely safe environment for you and your kids to come back into, but also to make this an absolutely incredible experience for you that will allow you to take one step closer to Jesus Christ every single day. Will you be here? Will you be inviting someone to be here to experience this incredible series that has the potential to change our lives? Thanks so much for being at Core Online. We hope to see you soon.